Hi, I'm Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. My special guest today is the brilliant and masterful author who also happens to be my co-host, Daniel Chacon.
Does that mean if I interview you, I have to say nice things like that?
No, you don't. These are genuine, authentic.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah, of course. I will be speaking with him about the amazing new collection of poetry by Andres Montoya, published collection called A Jury of Trees. And it's out with Bilingual Press, the same press that first published Andres's debut book, Ice Worker Sings and Other Poems. And of course, of the book, which has already garnered some wonderful reviews, the U.S. poet laureate Juan Felipe Herrera says, I bathe in Andres's posthumous collection and its divine last breath razors and its broken, healing, and cosmic and lonesome warrior heart and its brave shields for the abandoned, the ripped, the blood-spattered shadow being ambling through parking lot. You cannot.
What?
This is the thing. Here's the thing. One thing we learned a long time ago is that you don't ask Juan Felipe for a blurb because it'll be better than the book. But no, Juan Felipe was actually one of Andres's teachers and was one of your teachers as well at one point, wasn't he, Daniel?
Yeah, I took him for the very first ever Chicano creative writing workshop at Fresno State. When I was a student, I was in the English department and he was hired by Chicano Studies.
Right.
And he taught that class and it was fantastic.
Well, as we're already underway in this interview, but before we do that, I want to just mention that we are now, if you're just tuning in, we are going to have this wonderful conversation with my co-host, a good friend, and of course the editor and award-winning author Daniel Chacon. We'll be talking about A Jury of Trees, the posthumous collection of poetry by Andres Montoya. So stick around. Daniel Chacon is the author of Hotel Juarez, Stories, Rooms, and Loops, which won both the 2014 Penn Oakland Award for Literary Excellence and the Texas Knox Award for Best Book of Fiction in 2013. His collection of short stories titled Unending Rooms won the 2008 Hudson Prize, and he also has another novel out called And the Shadows Took Him, as well as his collection of short stories Chicano Chicanery. He is the editor and co-editor of The Last Supper of Chicano Heroes, the selected work of José Antonio Burciaga. He's been widely published everywhere in literary magazines and anthologies, and he is also a professor here in the creative writing department of UTEP. His latest book is titled The Cholo Tree. It is out with Arte Público Press, and we'll be talking with him today about A Jury of Trees, the posthumously published collection of poetry by Andres Montoya, which Daniel edited. Daniel Chacon, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you. It's good to be on the show. I've always wanted to be on this show. I'm a big fan. I don't like your co-host much, no. But I really like your shows.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Your co-host is a little arrogant.
We could say that you're probably,
a little snobby.
You noticed. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Like he thinks just because he drinks good wine that he's like better than everybody else.
Yeah. And you know what? I've been waiting a long time to interview my co-host. So, yeah.
Awesome. I should probably mention one thing.
Yes.
The book, A Jury of Trees, the poems by Andres Montoya, who was a very good friend of mine, and I know he's a friend of yours too, is co-published by Bilingual Press and Letras Latinas out of Notre Dame University.
And that's Francisco Aragon who heads that up out there?
Yes.
Wonderful. And he's been instrumental in seeing this.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. When I spoke to the family. After Andres died, it was kind of hard, right?
Because wait, when did he die? What year did he die?
It was 90-something. I forget.
I want to say it was 1999. Yeah.
But before he died, he was in the hospital in Fresno, downtown Fresno. He asked me if I would... He wanted me to take over all his poems. He wanted everything to be turned over to me and for me to do whatever I thought would be best with it. He didn't tell me specifically what to do. But after he died, I just didn't have the heart. I don't know why. I didn't have the heart. I didn't have the courage. I didn't have the will to go to his family and say, give me all his work, because right. That's what he wanted. You know, I just didn't have right. The heart to say it. I was just grieved, and I went to Minnesota, where I took a position at a small liberal arts college on the prairie. And a couple of years later, when I had gotten this job here at UTEP, I was at a conference, our artist conference in, I think it was Houston, and Malaquias Montoya was there, the great Chicano artist, right. Malaquias Montoya, who was also Andres Montoya's father. And it was a nice reunion because I hadn't seen them since the funeral, and we had lunch together. It was very nice, and I was talking to him and Leslie, and that's when I told him what Andres had requested of me. And immediately they contacted Francisco Aragon, who had all the material. They had given it to him.
Oh.
And Francisco sent it to me. And ever since then, Francisco and I have had the plan to come out with this book. And he immediately says, I will co-sponsor this. And
right.
And so, yeah, he was instrumental. Letras Latinas and Francisco Aragon, who is responsible for the Andres Montoya Poetry right. Prize, it made this book possible.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things I gathered is because I know you personally also in the writing community as well. And you know, I know that this book has kind of been in the works for years, you know. And about how long would you say it took to actually, like, when you started working on the manuscript with Francisco, you know, and having that back and forth until now that it's been published? About how long did you say that?
Well, I, like I said, I'm not very good at numbers. In fact, on the way over here, I was saying to you, yeah, I've been doing this show for 5 years now. And you says, well, you've been saying that for 2 years, that you've been doing it for 5 years. But when I got the material from Francisco, there was a lot of it, a big old pile of stuff. And I mean, a complete manuscript, a lot of printed out poetry, but there was also a lot of handwritten stuff. I mean, there were journals that where he kept his most private thoughts. There were journals where he was writing first drafts of poems. He was known to hang out in this coffee shop in the Tower District in Fresno. And it's called Mea Culpa now, but it used to be called, what was it called before
that? It was called Mea Culpa, The Review.
The Review. He used to hang out there and write poetry as he sat by a window drinking coffee. And there was those poems, and there was just so much material. It was overwhelming. And there was even drawings that he had done while he was dying in the hospital, and poems that he wrote while he was dying in the hospital. And so, you know, once I got that, the first thing I needed to do was try to transcribe everything.
Yeah, right.
And I got a couple of graduate students to help me out, TAs that were working for the Department of Creative Writing.
Here at UTEP.
Yeah. And that took us a couple of years, I think. Then a couple more years just kind of sifting through everything. And
yeah.
I went through a lot of stuff he was writing about poets, you know, that probably could have been critical papers, a lot of personal journal stuff, a lot of things that were so personal and private that I don't think he ever thought anybody would read it, which I include entirely in the book. No, I didn't. And then there came a time, and I'm really embarrassed to tell you this.
Don't be.
But I'm going to do it anyway. I was moving from one house to another, and I lost a bunch of the material. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And Maceo Montoya, Andres' little brother, who's an amazing artist and an amazing writer in himself, we've had him on the show, a lot of what I had was photocopied, and he had the originals.
Maceo did?
Yes. Right. And so I contacted him and said, hey, man, I'm sorry, I misplaced.
Yeah.
And so he resent me again, and I had to start over again on some of the stuff. But anyway, all in all, I think it took about, like I said, I'm not good with numbers, but at least 8 years.
So we'll add 2 more years to that. Yeah, it's like 10 years.
Maybe
yeah.
10 years, yeah.
Man,
I mean, it took a long time because I didn't know what to include. I had to go through everything. And some of the poems, quite frankly, weren't that good.
Right.
Because they were first draft.
Right, exactly. But you contextualize that even in the book. It's a wonderfully put together book. I mean, because you give a great preface to it, and then there's a foreword, and then there's a sort of a critique on, or not a critique, but what is it, an essay? By
a critical essay by an Andres Montoya scholar.
That's right.
Her name is Stephanie Ferra, and she's out, I think, of the University of Syracuse.
Okay.
There's a critical introduction written by Stephanie Ferra from Syracuse University. She's an Andres Montoya poetry, or an Andres Montoya scholar. She's written about him on several occasions.
And then, yeah, exactly. They have that. You have that. And then you actually, you know, in the sections of the book, you've titled them in ways that allow us to see, you know, sort of his early poems and what he was doing, you know, as a sort of young poet. And then later on, as he was passing, the leukemia poems, the stuff he was writing while laying down and, you know, getting ready to pass on to the next world. And so that context really allows us then to kind of see the trajectory of Andres Montoya as a poet sort of coming to be and also leaving us at the same time. It's a powerful collection. In fact, I want to ask you, would you mind sharing a poem from the collection?
You were talking about the sections. What ultimately I ended up doing, at first there was so much material, I thought, my God, you know, Andres Montoya can publish, you know, 5 more books. you know, ultimately I decided to put 3 sections. The first section is comprised of poems that he wrote while he was in graduate school, and even some as an undergraduate when we were both students at Fresno State.
Right.
And then He went on to earn an MFA in poetry at the University of Oregon. And he was writing all the time, writing poems. And so the first section is those early poems. And then the second section is a complete manuscript he wrote after his first book, which won the American Book Award and was called The Ice Worker Sings and Other Poems. He wrote another entire manuscript, and it's called Whispered Fruit. Uh-huh. And that's the second section, that entire right. manuscript. And then the last section I call Leukemia Poems, and these are poems that he wrote when he was in the hospital and he knew he was dying. And those were the most difficult ones to go through, of course, because right. He was a man of faith, and he believed that when he died, he was going to go on to greater things. He truly believed that, and you can tell it in the poems that death in many ways was, I think, to paraphrase Rumi, a kiss with eternity. And you could tell that. You could see that in yeah. those poems. And so that's the third section. So what I think would be cool is to read maybe a poem from each section.
That's a great idea.
The first section, like I said, these are poems he wrote when he was in grad school. And Andres was a chain-smoking, beer-drinking, in-your-face, radical Chicano Christian. And these poems were at that time of his life.
Right, and, right. Gotcha, yeah.
Whereas that... later on, as you know, he kind of converted.
Right.
He was always a, quote, Christian, but he ultimately made this conversion. He quit smoking. He quit right. drinking. And he became
that's when I knew him, yeah. yeah. That's when I knew him, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's poems, you know, that are from that era. But the poem I'm going to read right now is one that he wrote when he was still a smoking, cursing, you know, radical Chicano, in-your-face Christian.
Which page? Tell me which page you're on.
I'll do the poem called Cucarachas. And as I said, he wrote this when he was a young man. And we were roommates at the Ghetto Woods in Fresno, California. We called them the Ghetto Woods because people like us lived there. And they ultimately became regentrified, and now people like us can't afford to live there.
Yeah.
But it's called Cucarachas. Oh, and there's a little story about this.
I'm sure there is. Tell us about it.
I forgot about this, but yeah. when Andres and I lived together in this apartment, we were both slobs. I mean, we were just both incredible slobs.
Of course.
And we never cleaned, and our bathroom was so disgusting that
oh,
I remember, you know, a friend of mine who came over, you know, she wouldn't see me after she saw the bathroom. I mean, it was really disgusting.
She was like, forget you, man.
Yeah, you know, if we want to talk, you're going to have to come over to my place, or we're going to have to go to a neutral place. I mean, it was bad. And the roaches were so bad.
No.
I mean, they were everywhere. It were so bad that, for example, if you opened a drawer, not only would the roaches start to jump out of the drawers and climb all over the place, but one time I got a piece of foil because I was going to wrap some food, and I pulled the foil out, and the roaches were sliding down the foil like it was a wee,
like Joe's Place, or what is that? That
show, yeah, it was so bad that finally we had to bomb the whole thing, and our neighbors hated us because all the roaches went to their house. But anyway, I think that's what inspired this poem, and it's called Cucarachas. From the walls they come through cracks like guerrillas, attacking with precision. No crumbs for these, only large game will do. Stronger and smarter they are, or perhaps just hungrier, like millions of tiny coyotes coming to take from my plate while I sit at the table. Tonight, I will sit in the dark and wait for them, feeling first the tickle on my hands and neck like a lover's tongue, the rustling in my hair like a summer's rain, and then the eyes will focus. There will be an army cheering, claiming victory.
There's so much I want to say about that poem, you know, but one of the things is that comes to mind too, and I don't know if, you know, I mean, I would imagine that there is some allusion to that in this poem, but Oscar Seta Acosta, you know, in his Revolt of the Cockroach People, and how he writes about, you know, he uses that kind of a metaphor for you know, la raza, you know, the idea of all these cockroaches crawling out of the cracks and darks and from obscurity and surviving Armageddon, and, you know.
Right, right, yeah. The cockroach as the metaphor for the, you know, for the oppressed.
For the resilience
of the oppressed, and the indigenous, the ones who are going to survive no matter what. And, yeah, you know, the thing is, as I was reading it, I didn't think of that. I thought only about those roaches that really did have victory over our apartment.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that you mention it, Oscar Zeta Acosta, The Revolt of the Cockroach People, who wrote a seminal book in Chicano activist literature, but which unfortunately is incredibly misogynist and difficult to read, was called The Brown Buffalo. And Andres had a little bit of his characteristics. I mean, he wasn't misogynist, but he was huge. He was in your face. He was, he didn't blow up Safeways like Oscar Zeta Acosta apparently did, but he would certainly get in your face. He got arrested many times on campus for protesting. He brought about 200-300 students to the office of the president of the university, had a sit-in until the cops had to drag everybody away. I mean, he was pretty radical, and he was huge, and he was white. He was really white. If you saw Andres Montoya, you would say, oh, well, there's a white guy trying to look like a cholo.
Right.
Because he looked white.
Yeah, he was very black-complected.
And so I used to call him the white buffalo.
White buffalo.
The white buffalo, yeah.
how did he feel about that?
Oh, he loved it. He loved it, because, it related him to Oscar Zeta Acosta.
Yeah.
Those cockroaches. I remember one line that he came up with. It was one of the first lines of poetry that was really good, because he used to do, he started off like a lot of us, writing really bad poetry, but heartfelt poetry. I mean, you could tell he had the passion, but at first his skill wasn't that advanced, and he would write really horrible poetry. Like, I remember once he wrote a poem called Ha Democracy, and the poem, and I remember it, it says, he would go, "Ha! Democracy. You call this democracy? This isn't democracy. It's oppression." And it was really bad poetry like that. But one of the first lines, but he loved poetry and he read, and you could see his development as he went on. And one of the first lines that he wrote that to me, marked a transition into another level of his poetry was, "Our lives are reflected on the back of cockroaches." And he had that line. It ended up appearing in one of his poems in The Ice Worker Sings, but he had that line long before the poem, and he would say it. And he would say it as cockroaches were squirming around our apartment. And
our lives are reflected on the backs of cockroaches.
The backs of cockroaches, yeah. And you could see it. You could see the shiny cockroach with our lives reflected in it.
That'd be a great painting.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the cockroaches, became an important symbol for him in his initial.
And I also see, I agree. And I also see, though, in all of Andres's work, actually, I can't help but every time I read his work, every single time I read one of his poems, it sounds strikingly sounds really influenced, heavily influenced by like Omar Salinas.
Absolutely.
Or even Larry Levis. Like those poems are in Andres's words. I feel them. You know?
Yeah. In fact, when I was a young man, way before I knew Andres, I worked at this restaurant, and the waiter was an English major getting a master's in English, and he found out that I liked to write. And so he brought me this book by a poet named Omar Salinas, some white guy. This guy was all American, white guy, crew cut, and he introduced me to Omar Salinas, and I loved it. And so when I finally got the chance to meet him. I'm leaving a detail out. The book that he gave me, Omar signed over to me. And it was a wonderful gift. His name was John. I don't remember his last name, but John, wherever you are, thank you. That was a beautiful gift. He gave me this book signed by Omar Salinas, and Omar, it was The Sadness of Days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Omar wrote, "Daniel, if you ever get married, whatever you do, don't look at your wife's left leg." Omar.
That totally sounds like something Omar would have written.
And for years, I asked John, he says, "What does this mean?" He goes, "I don't know, man." And for years, I pondered over, what could he mean? Don't look at your wife's left leg. And anytime I dated somebody, I would, secretly look at her left leg to see if there was something, there's some sign about what it meant. And I finally got a chance to meet him years later when I wrote this play, and I wrote a character like him, and he actually acted in the play. So it was very exciting to have one of my poetry heroes in a play that I wrote.
That's great.
And so I finally asked him, I says, what did you mean? And I, you know, I told him what he wrote. He goes, I was just joking.
Totally.
But that line, don't look at her left leg, appeared in the poetry of Andrés Montoya and even in his first book.
Right.
And, you know, I don't remember if I was the one that introduced him to Omar Salinas, but we had a copy of that book in our house. And he read it and he read the poems aloud and he thought Omar was a genius.
Right.
And yeah, that was one of his first poetry influences that brought him to the level that he would ultimately reach.
Right.
That is the level outside of abstractions and the level where he could write these images that more resemble Latin American poetry,
right.
What Lorca would call right. poetic logic, these really beautiful images that really logically don't make sense, but they just flash images, you know, into your... Because Omar was like that. He was like a Latin American poet who wrote in English.
Right, yeah.
And and Omar led him to Neruda, led him to other Latin American poet and Spanish language poets who he admired deeply before he even got into the English language poets, like Levine. And
that reminds me of a story. One of the first times when when I met Andreas, he must have been maybe like 27, 28 probably. Mm-hmm. At one point there, this is like, gosh, I want to say the mid-90s or something. We were reading at Barnes & Noble in Fresno. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I had like this little, maybe I had written 5 poems in all my life at that point, you know, and I had it in my back pocket and I knew who Andreas was, of course, by then, because he was teaching at Fresno City College. And so anyway, we're reading there. And after I was done reading, he says to me, listen, you know, I know you like to write those political poems. And I go, yeah. And I thought he was going to congratulate me or something. And he goes, I'm just going to share one thing with you that Omar Salinas once told me. And I said, what? He goes, I used to write political poems too. And overtly political poems, of course, he's talking about. And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah. Omar said to me, consider Neruda. And that's all he said to me was, consider Neruda. So I passed that on to you, consider Neruda. And I thought, what does that mean? Anyway, I start to see now, because of this book, A Jury of Trees, I'm able now to see that trajectory of where he was and maybe why he made that comment and where his transition was into the poet he later became, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I don't know, maybe we should share something from his second manuscript,
okay,
Whispered
this is
Fruit.
From Whispered Fruit. Like I said, this was a complete manuscript, and this was the easiest part to gather together. All I really had to do was transcribe it, which I said, you know, I had some help with that, and edit it. I'm going to read a part of a poem. The poem is called Generation, this is part 2 of it. I'll just read this part. Tonight, I am not a poet. The stars are here. My dog Kuma sits alone, and an old flower falls onto the moon. This is an old sadness. I ache at the sea. What did you bring to us, sweet sister? Come, let me add my measure of salt to your white lips. Tonight I have nothing to do with songs. Instead, I speak to my legs like old friends arriving from the sea with words in their pockets. Tonight I am not a poet. I speak words forbidden, hope, love, beauty, faith, soul, spirit. I speak to the trash cans lining the road. I say, look up, thy redemption draws nigh. I watch young lovers stroll my street, stumbling shyly into embrace. They sing, they breathe like the trees, praising God.
And if you are just tuning in, and if that voice sounds familiar, that's because it is. It is my co-host, Daniel Chacon, who we're speaking with about the latest collection that he edited. It is a posthumously collection of poetry called A Jury of Trees by Andrés Montoya, and it's out with Bilingual Review Press in collaboration with Letras Latinas at the University of Notre Dame. Is that correct?
Yes. And there's two things that I could say about this poem or the excerpt that I read. And one is that Andres once told me, when I was struggling as a writer, we were both writers. I was a fiction writer. He was a poet. He once told me, don't think of yourself as a Chicano writer. And of course, immediately my Chicano, you know, my Chicanismo said, what do you mean, man? I'm a Chicano writer. But he goes, don't think of yourself as a Chicano writer. Think of yourself as a Latin American writer. And that really opened up a lot for me because, you know, it made sense, you know, that... You know, we are Chicanos, part of the Latin American tradition. You know, we're part of the U.S. tradition, but also the Latin American tradition. And he loved the Latin American poets. And one time he told me, he says, you know what pisses me off about cracker craft?
That's what he called
this,
it.
This was in his more radical days, his pre-conversion days. He called it cracker craft because... you know, he thought that the craft and the workshop sometimes tried to mold poets into being less Latin American and more, you know, in the U.S. tradition, whatever that was for him at the time. But he says Latin American poets can use the word like soul. They can use words like love and hope and beauty. North American poets, they don't like to use words like that.
Yeah,
because they're too full of meaning or whatever reason. And so that's what he means when he says, I speak words forbidden, hope, love, beauty, faith, soul, spirit.
I speak words forbidden, right, gotcha.
Because basically, hey, a poem should not have words like this.
Right, yeah. I could almost hear that happening in the workshop, you know, in his grad program or something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the last things I want to mention too is that Andrés Montoya's legacy since he's passed has just, I mean, it's really been, with the Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize, he's launched the career of many wonderful poets, you know, that have come up through that prize.
All of, I think, or most of whom we've had on our show, like Lorian Guerrero, David Campos.
Yeah. Cheryl Luna, folks like that. And so, you know, his legacy lives on. And in fact, I know that aside from A Jury of Trees, you know, you could pick up any one of these other poets' books as well and find the sort of the spirit and the essence of Andrés Montoya's work still in that too. And that's a wonderful thing. Anything you want to say about that before we cut out?
No, it's just great to finally see this come to light. And I have, you know, Bilingual Press and Letras Latinas to thank. Francisco Aragon was instrumental in getting this done. And I received a lot of help from my graduate students, you know, in transcribing. And I guess it was a labor of love. And maybe it took me 10 years to do it because I didn't want to let it go. I'm glad it's out there. And I hope that it brings many blessings to readers and to the poetry world.
Well, it's a long-awaited collection. I know that a lot of folks in the community have been waiting for this book, and it's finally nice to have to be able to hold it and that the cover is actually on one of Andrés's paintings as well. It's wonderful, wonderful collection. So great work, Daniel. Congratulations on this.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, I'd like to thank my special guest today, the award-winning author, editor, and my talented co-host, Daniel Chacon, who I have been speaking with about A Jury of Trees, the collection of poetry by Andrés Montoya. Be sure to pick that up. You won't be disappointed. That wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank also our wonderful producer behind the board there, Kimberly Garcia. And I am Tim Hernandez, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place, on Words on a Wire, KTEP 88.5 FM.